Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. And today I welcome Richard Kuritz, a political scientist, writer, and public relations strategist whose life experiences working with authors and change makers in these turbulent times has discovered that the spoken word, intentions and actions all reflect whether we can function in cooperation with each other or whether we can create new problems for ourselves and our relationships. In other words, what we say, when we say it, and what we really mean are the components of having either effective and productive interactions or the opposite, unsuccessful communication. Hello, Richard, and thank you for joining me today for a very important topic during these very troubling days.
Well, hello, Cheryl, and a pleasure talking to a fellow Long Islander.
Yes, I always laugh when I hear that. You're out in California, I know.
Richard, I am,
yes.
But originally I grew up on Long Island, so.
Just where I am now.
Right.
Richard, as listeners of Healing From Within are well aware, my guests and I share intimate and insightful experiences aimed at learning more about the human and spiritual energies that motivate us to create and manifest a healthy, purposeful awareness of self, nature, the world, and universe as we truly try to understand life in its many complex aspects. As you said to me just before, it's not easy being human. In today's episode, Richard Kuritz, who works as a media relations specialist and whose background includes finance, construction, and politics, will share an independent perspective on America, which crosses party lines and is anchored in common sense and the Constitution. Realizing that at this time, our national and international concerns must be based on a greater appreciation of communication and how we may improve all issues by understanding the effect we have on each other by the words we choose, the actions, and indeed the appreciation or gratitude we have for ourselves and for life in general. Richard, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and to remember a person, place, event, or interest that was important to them and may have shown them or others the path in life they would follow or what they might value as an adult. So think back for a minute.
Oh, I've got a short but poignant tale for somebody who I don't even know their last name, who profoundly influenced my observation of interaction and misunderstanding between people. I was perhaps 6 years old. I was living on East 8th Street in a tenement in New York City, and I was going to day camp because I couldn't play downstairs because people would beat the tar out of me all the time. Anyway, so I went to this day camp in the projects. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're those big, ugly, yellow buildings along the East River.
I have. I grew up in Brooklyn also.
Okay,
in
so
New York
across,
City.
Across the river from you with those projects looming there. And I went to a day camp there, and the counselor there was this big black guy named Jerry, and he was great. And we had this pool that we went in and waded in and ran around. I can't remember what else we did, but you know, when we'd get out of the pool, we'd change. And there were kids there of every color of the rainbow. And there was a kid I was with who was, I'm sure he was Caucasian, and he was pointing at one of the black kids and laughing. And I turned around, and in the innocence and stupidity of being 6 years old and a loudmouth, I'm no longer six, but I'm still a loudmouth, but I turned around and said, "So what? So he's a different color." And I was really annoyed at the person who was apparently doing the mocking. Well, Jerry overheard part of the conversation, and I finally functionally got benched for the afternoon. I never explained it, never was asked to explain it, never, you know, got to address the issue with anybody else. But I observed from that that people act on what they perceive, not on fact. They exacerbate misunderstanding by doing that, and they give license to further misunderstanding. That was a hell of a lot to learn at age six, and I'm sure I didn't put it in those terms, but what I got was, this guy isn't paying attention, and he's in charge, and I'm taking the heat for trying to do the right thing.
Well, that's all right. It's always
it's not the first time that was going to happen in life.
Yeah, it's always right to do the right thing, even if we have to take some heat. And some of us are just wired that way and born that way. And that's a great story. And I thank you for being able to do the right thing and speak up for injustice, because there's all too much of that going on. But let's go on to, we're talking about communication. So if not the gadgety, what is the essence of communication today?
Well, the essence of communication today is exactly the same as it was when one cave dweller said to the other, you know, hey, Vinny, you got any leftover steak? somebody has got to have something they want to communicate, and the other person has got to be physically and emotionally receptive to hearing it. If Vinny in the cave next door has gone through 3 months of no meat in his cave, he's going to be really resentful of his next door neighbor asking if he's got some extra meat. There's grounds for conflict there. It's the exact same thing today. If I want to communicate something to you or to your audience, the first thing I have to do is be respectful of who my audience is. And what the audience needs to do, if they've taken the time to want to be an audience, they have to open their ears and perhaps their minds to whatever I'm going to say. Now, that's an easy thing to ask for and not always an easy thing to do, especially when you have vehement people on one side talking to vehement people on the other side. They're not talking to, they're talking at each other.
Yeah.
And so you lay down some ground rules. So when I'm training somebody for media, or when we're talking to someone about developing a book, which is what my company does professionally, the first thing you say is, who are you writing to and what are you writing for? Who are you talking to? Who's your audience? If I'm putting you on the radio, don't start in by bifurcating your audience. And anyone who's been through a divorce knows what the word bifurcating means. You know, you just chop it in half. When you do that, I mean, if you walk in to an audience that you don't know the makeup of the audience, and you immediately put on a Donald Trump hat, you're going to bifurcate the audience. If you walk in there and immediately make a comment that's in the opposite direction, you're going to bifurcate the audience. You don't want to do that. You want to keep that audience listening. That's your first job, communicate with the audience. So whatever portion of what you want to say is applicable, use the portion that's applicable to the entire audience. Once they are listening, then you can have them query their own opinions. But they must ask that question of themselves after having heard you, and they're not going to hear you if you come in there like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah. All right, so human communication is very unique for abstract language, and the development of civilization has also been closely linked with progress in telecommunication. So to add to all the other problems we have between audiences and people being open to different views, we now have telecommunication. And this is fueling a lot of the division between people. So my next question would be, might the many wars, disruptions, anger, and violence in many of the countries today, at the present time, seem to be a decline in how we are being taught to communicate, appreciate people, respect other people's cultures and views, and also an influence of social media over the last 20 years. It's a big
Okay,
question.
I've got a big question. I'm going to give you a real short answer. If you remember the movie Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman, I love movie lines
Me
because
too.
out of every movie, I had a dear friend who was a psychologist who passed away a few years ago, and his famous word he left me with was the word nugget. You're going to listen to 1,000 words from somebody until you hear the nugget. The nugget in that movie was the line, "What we have here is a failure to communicate." That failure to communicate starts with a failure to understand the difference between fact and belief. I like extreme examples. They're not necessarily realistic, but they make the point. You can believe gravity doesn't exist. But if you step out that 10-story window, you got about a second and a half to readjust your belief system.
Because you're going
Otherwise,
down.
because you will receive the consequences of your failure to address facts rather than beliefs. It is not any effectively different if you're from a culture that believes women should be subjugated. And anybody who doesn't believe things the way you believe should be killed, converted, or set on fire. It's a real hard sell to bring that person around. At some point in time, those who wish to communicate with them must come to the conclusion that, I need to pick a different audience. We're not going to win a communications battle with fanatical people of any group. And there is no group out there that at some point in history doesn't have blood on its hands. Not a group. If you go clear back to those guys in the caves, sooner or later there were a few of them that decided that, hey, you do have meat and I don't. And it's easier to take it from you than to go hunt down an animal. Human nature. Okay, human nature is consistent. The only thing that's changed is technology. We all still get up in the morning. We want to eat. We want the sun to shine sometimes. We want to be comfortable. We want to procreate. We want to have pleasure. We first want to survive. This is human nature.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it must be tempered with knowledge. That's the essence of civilization.
Yeah, we
And
were
that
just
we.
saying before, you remember, we have many emotions and many feelings, but no one can act on all of them. They must moderate themselves. They must think it through. They
You
must
get hit.
sometimes be silent, and they sometimes must, ask for help in trying to get the facts that we were just talking about and understand clearly before they act. Now, there are
They
many
have.
barriers to effective communication, many,
Sure.
many barriers. Some of them are, of course, physical barriers. If you're in a
Yeah, but the.
poorly equipped building and you can't hear people, or if you work in an office where there's staff shortages and people are not communicating all their needs, so the work is not going to go effectively. And then there are others, as you are talking about, attitudinal barriers, and then there's ambiguity of words and phrases,
Which there's no
culture.
excuse for.
Yes.
See, that's where I jump in on that. And I give none of these people who exist now, who have access to a free, albeit substandard sometimes, public education, I give them no excuse for failing to use the correct words. And one of the worst words that we keep using over and over again is race.
Okay.
I had this conversation with somebody I was on the air with on a panel. I've had this conversation with other people, and erase this and erase that and racism this and race. And I just stopped and said, before we continue, can you tell me how many races we have on this planet? Because I'm a little confused. Because best of my knowledge, there is the human race. After that, you can break down into whatever cultural and genealogical groups you want, from Negroid to Caucasoid to Mongoloid to Eastern European to Asian to what, however you want to break out the development of mankind. There's still only one race. So the two morons that came up with the word race in the early 1800s were two people who had, how did I name it, perceived superiority. They were anthropologists who came upon a group, I couldn't tell you where it was, I think it was in South America, who they could not communicate with. And they couldn't understand their culture, and obviously those people couldn't understand the anthropologist's culture. And therefore, they felt that this was a inferior race. And that's when the word started coming out. And since then, it's become quite the business. It's never been accurate.
Well,
now, you can call somebody a bigot who believes that simply because of some physical characteristics, they are a superior person. But if we don't start using the right words, we don't turn around to these people and say, you know, you have a superiority complex. You have a misperception that you're better than this person because you're white, or because you're black, or because you're this, or because you're that, or because you're Jewish, or because you're not Jewish. But this is a misperception. And as soon as you get past that, you take that whole toy away from the media, that whole thing, and say, you want to call this person a bigot? Show me where they've demonstrated that they feel superior to someone else simply because of their cultural or physiological development.
Well, here's the whole problem now in all societies. Ego-based minds are not paying attention to what you just said, that we're one humanity, one energy, life force, and they're using labels for everything. I have never, and there are many people like me, chosen to call somebody by any of the names that I hear in the political discussions, very heated discussions, where people use the words, it's even hard for me to say some of the words, racist, homophobic, Islamophobic, sexist, misogynist. I mean, you don't know another person, and you're using names to call them something other than, and they're not positive names. They're very hurtful, negative names.
Did you spend any time in the schoolyard as a kid? Let's throw names at this. You know, you're ugly, you're short, you're fat, you're miserable, your mother dresses,
you're funny. You know, I don't remember that so
sandwiches.
Much of that. I don't remember so much of that as a child. Maybe because I was busy just flying above the ground a little bit, happy, enjoying what I was learning, trying to share with others. I didn't need to take things, because things came to me pretty easily. Now, I was blessed that way, or gifted that way, and actually it took me until my adulthood to try to start to see how people communicate with each other with such negative tones, words, actions, and behaviors. And communication is not just the words. You know, it's the body language, it's the culture, it's a whole host of other stuff going on. There are gender barriers also to communication because, for example, many women are found to be more critical in addressing a conflict, and many men simply like to withdraw and let it pass because they know, logically, things will pass.
I've been married for almost 48 years. I understand that women are more vocal about something they disagree with.
Well, we're a little more emotional. A little more emotional.
And thank God for the difference between the two. I mean, you know, we both had the ability to contact with the great John Gray, who points out the fact that it's okay that men and women are different.
Absolutely.
And this is how they what they need to understand about each other in order to, what's that word we were using before, communicate.
Yes, communicate.
And you know, it's this is not a new problem. But for example, when I get someone, I won't mention who it is, but I had someone who's very, very smart, and had a really, really good story to tell to put on air, and they had spent years developing the story, as any writer would. They spend years writing a book, and now they got a half hour on the air to talk about it. Well, you're going to take those 3 years, and you're going to put some part of the essence of that into 20 minutes. Make it 10, because the other person is going to be talking for half that time. How do you do that? Well, the first thing you have to do is get three basic points down about communicating. You have to make a statement. You have to make a declaration. Okay? I am going to say, the example I've always used is, you know, life from outer space. You know, I firmly believe that there's life in outer space. And then the next is an explanation. The reason I believe this is because there's been so much evidence from, you know, unbiased sources, blah, blah, blah. Whatever the story is, there's an explanation. And then there's the important part when you're dealing with an audience, which is inclusion. Almost everybody here knows somebody or has had an experience that they can't quite explain that could be tied to extraterrestrial life or some other inclusionary thing. Everybody here, or you, Mr. or Mrs. Host, have had this feeling, or somehow you keep the audience included. In order to do that, you can't say something that is completely outrageous unless you're talking to an audience of outrageous people, which accomplishes nothing, because then you're not developing your idea beyond your base. And if you're a new author, you don't have a base. So the rule is, you know, those three things, and they have to be credible, and they have to be calm, and you don't get into a spinning contest with the host. You never do that, because you're always going to lose. It's their show. You have to be respectful of the host and the audience, or don't get on the show.
And you don't get confrontational. Some people
no,
are easily led into
confrontational is not
that.
Informational.
Right.
That's the key. You know.
Thank you.
It's not. And there's a dozen little quips like that that I've written down, but it's a fact. If I get you annoyed with me, you're not going to listen to me. And anybody who's ever had an argument with their spouse or significant other understands that when the temperature goes up, the ears close up. It doesn't work.
Right. But let's go on to something. What about public perception? We're talking about what's going on in the world now, and this is an important question. What about public perception and misperception? Should we point fingers? What
well,
are we
yes.
having right now going on?
Yes, but we should point fingers accurately. The first finger we should point is we should take that forefinger and put it against our temple, and we should think.
Good.
That's the first thing. Point to your head, and you think. And then you say, then you point to yourself and say, what does this mean to me? And then you point it out the nearest window and say, what does it mean to the bigger society? We keep misperceiving the fact that civilization is a process. It's not a place we've arrived at.
It's constantly changing.
And it has to be. And sometimes it's going well, and sometimes it's going not really well, in case you've missed some of the news. But the thing is when you go to point a finger, you have to point it with accuracy. And here's where I come to my bread and bologna sample. As long as there's money, we are an economic planet. No matter how you cut it, whether it's measured in money or in something else, we are, everybody wants something. And
well, they want to be respected for their hard
well, no,
work.
Well, no, I'm talking about the pragmatic side of it.
All
I'm
right.
talking about the pragmatic side of it. The fact that the people who control a lot of communication want more money and more control. So in exchange for bread, they hand out bologna because they think bologna sells. They think people will keep eating the bologna. And the public, by and large, is getting real sick of bologna. They really
Absolutely.
Are. And they're beginning to see it. But the problem is until they get up to speed, until they turn around and say, wait a minute, what is this thing called racism? Wait a minute, what is this thing called whatever it is? Wait a minute, I need to get some knowledge about this before I go and march about it. Wait a minute, who are you who are telling me that I don't have rights as a woman when I've had more rights developed since the 70s as a woman than they have over the last 7,000 years?
True.
And no, you know, we would like more respect and we would like some other things and we would like to fine-tune this in society, but I'm not ready to go burn down the Lincoln Memorial over it. And I'm speaking euphemistically as though I were a woman. I'm talking from my feminine side. What can I say? But
that's very good.
The first thing you need is
you have
facts.
To use both sides.
Yeah, got to use both sides. But you have to go from facts, not beliefs. And emotions don't run on fact. They run on belief. And those beliefs include the emotional responses of fear, jealousy, you know, all the bad things, all the things in human nature that have made things go wrong.
Yeah. So, what is the R word that nobody likes?
Responsibility.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got rights. Yeah, did you know with that right that it comes with some responsibilities?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you mean? Well, you got a right to speak, but you can't scream fire in a crowded theater where there's not a fire. You've got a right to protest and dissent. You don't have a right to disrupt and damage. You know, you want to take issue with the laws of man? Take issue with the laws of man. Don't take issue with the laws of nature, because those idiots that crossed the Interstate 5 to block it up a few months ago,
yes.
The second time they did it, one of them got hit by a car. Hey, guess what? That's a law of nature. 2,000 pounds at 60
That's
miles an hour.
That's the law of attraction. They were acting with a negative feeling, and they were hurt. But for me, I didn't know what R word you were going to use, but yes, responsibility is a very important one. I'm
going to
use resistance, because resistance, for in order to thrive in a physical world, it is necessary to learn to allow, accept, surrender to change, and since there is no control over anybody or anything, we must not separate ourselves from exploring all options and opportunities to create more love and compassion and success and health, vitality, and true joy. And that's only going to be done by working on our own personal growth and taking responsibility and not allowing other people to impose their will, their perceptions, and their negative words or thoughts or actions. In other words, an old saying is pretty good here: live and let live. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have seen how complicated it is to realize the effect we have on our family and friends as we try to make connections of love and positivity, but often fall short as a result of the complications created by personal ego-related fears, labels, and expectations of failure, or simply not being up to the challenges we face. Communication is an acquired skill and one that needs continuous refinement, much like our soul journey, which should be one of creating better relationships through self-investigation and viewing the needs of others more compassionately and with greater empathy. In the silence, sometimes we may communicate that love of life and the universe without uttering a word. Our body language, the energy from our facial expressions and heart are an important part of interacting effectively. Richard and I hope that it is in finding peace within and more love for yourself and life, nature, and all living things, that you will start to hear and use words of kindness, intelligence, and caring attitudes. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to and read about leaders in the field of communication, science, spirituality, metaphysics, psychology, the arts, and music, as we question ways to improve our individual lives and our world. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.